So I'm going to be talking about a study where we are looking at involvement of residents of care homes as active researchers. And so I'm really interested, what I'm interested to think about in this presentation is the idea of redefining the relationships that we have in research, the relationships between who we would term as researchers and who we would term as perhaps participants or before that the language of sort of subjects. And I'm going to be using an ongoing research project as an example to unpick this and draw on. And I'm going to be looking at really the spiral of between thinking of our principles, the impact that that has on our processes, and then how that might impact on the development of the project. And I want to be thinking about the process and the results of trying to attempt this redefinition of relationships and expertise. And I suppose this, which I think will evolve into our perhaps a logo for the project, is really to think about broadly the groups who might be involved in this project, people who live in care homes and people who work in care homes, a research team of academics and members of the public, and then of course the extent to which any one of those groups is mixed in its makeup as well. So first of all, I want to tell you a little bit about the starting points for this project and thinking a little bit about the context of it. I should have had a disclaimer slide, which I was then about to quickly type in as the computer froze. So this we have some research activity funded by our collaboration for academic and health research and care, and this is an organisation in the UK which is regionally based and aiming to bring closer together academic researchers, people out in health using research, and also the public. And we have an East of England clerk, and one of our strands in this clerk, one of our themes, is patient and public involvement. So that means that not only are we trying to take forward and enact patient and public involvement, we're also trying to look into it and investigate it as a topic. So three of the authors, myself, Fiona Poland and Bridget Penhale, put it in to the clerk for some funding to investigate this in care homes. And we came up with an acronym fairly early on, EMPIRE, which was enabling meaningful participation in research in residential care of elders. And although we had some qualms about this term, the pace was moving on, and we sort of stuck with it for the time being. And so, in a sense, this indicates one of our starting points where we were fitting in with institutional requirements, institutional activities and structures that are around formal processes like bidding for money, putting together proposals. And then when we were successful in getting some funding for this, our next key activity was to recruit some staff to join us on the project to help us carry this out in a timely way. So a little bit more perhaps about the starting points and the context for the research. In the UK, as I'm sure in other jurisdictions as well, there's increasing emphasis on involving patients and the public in research, and our National Institute for Health Research is aiming to change the relationships between researchers and the public so that researchers are much more engaged with the public. And this is part of a broader move with health provision generally. Equally, in terms of the sort of theoretical background to this, participation and participation in political and civic activities is something that's been discussed over a much longer period. And one of the key sort of authors and papers that which concepts really that much of the discussion and work goes back to in terms of participation is Arnstein's Ladder of Participation, which she prepared in 1968 in the context of publicly funded social programs, and she did actually intend it to be quite provocative, and she talked very much in terms of power relations, groups of people who had political power and groups of people who did not have political power, the have-nots. And many people who've got an interest in this area in participation will have seen the Ladder of Participation, talking about sort of degrees of involvement. And although that hasn't sort of magnified up very well there, the bottom what rung would be seen as manipulation. There's really no control over it from the participants moving up into therapy. So these would be examples of non-participation. But then there could be activities which would be seen as participant, where people might be the people not having power would be seen as informing or consulting the process, through to actual degrees of some sort of citizen power, where people might either be in partnership or ultimately they may actually be in full control and leading the activity. But of course, she certainly made the point that although this juxtaposes the sort of have-nots with the power holders as if they're two homogenous blocks, of course each group encompasses many, many points of view and competing vested interests, and it's really important to try and bear those in mind and be reflective on those as the process develops. We skip forward 40 years, and Andrea Cornwell has written, and many others, but picking on her sort of work, has argued that there's been such widespread adoption of the language of participation that the word carries so many diverse meanings, it's quite hard to unpick those and dig into what the intentions might really be. And she had a go in her article in 2008 examining the various meanings and the various practices that had been brought forward under the term participation. And interestingly, she argues that the distinction between citizen power at the top of this ladder and manipulation at the bottom and tokenism is still relevant in analysing the activities if we're thinking about powerful institutional bodies. But she also looks at some other typologies and then makes the argument that the difficulty with a typology is, especially a typology sort of presented in this way, is very normative. And it gets us thinking that we must aim and aspire to climb the ladder to be at the highest point, and it can be very easy to then knock back and invalidate attempts that perhaps don't reach that highest standpoint. And another pair of people, Tritter and McCallum, have been looking at participation in terms of the public and patient involvement initiative in the UK health world, PPI, as it's often shortened to. And again, they also go back to Arnstein, but they had a much more critical sort of take on Arnstein, and they were saying that their sort of take on it was that this was an over-focus on power, too much emphasis on power, and that actually a more helpful model, which is not so different from what Cornwall was saying in a way, but a more helpful model would be to understand participation as a mosaic rather than as a ladder, because there would be many different constituencies involved and many different ways in which the constituents might link. But I suppose that the common ground between all of that is a sense that groups are not homogenous. We need to attend to the different ways in which people bring an interest, a vested interest, into the activity, and the different ways in which they can relate. So coming back to the REACH project, which has changed its name from Empire, and I'll say a little bit about that in a second. The project is funded for 18 months to the resource of a research associate post for that period of time. But when we went through our recruitment process, we actually appointed three individuals, each working part-time. And that was very interesting, because the people we appointed were brought with them a whole range of skills, a whole range of their own vested sort of viewpoints, and already began influencing the project. So the aims of the project I've put up there, we wanted to look at what was known already and distill the key research messages from successful collaborative research involving older care home residents, of which there are certainly examples, and look at what's been successful in achieving that and resourcing that. But also to think about, who do we mean if we use this language of PPI, public and patient, patient and public, what does that mean in residential care homes, which are homes and not hospitals where people would be identified as patients, and surely people in there probably are citizens and the public. But also interested in what, in enacting a participative process, what are residents' priorities for involvement, what concerns might they have, and how can these be addressed? So our initial proposal was for that we would have active involvement throughout the project, and that we would achieve that in two ways, both through membership of an advisory group meeting regularly, so that people would become, be consultants, I suppose, and advisors too, and shape the process of the research, form a relationship over time and be supported to do that, but also through involving older people resident in care homes in some of the direct work of the research, and that the actual research methods would include systematic review of literature and focus groups. And from the get-go, as we were wanting to try out and embody a participative and involved process, we immediately were involved in the task of defining relationships. So the first sort of relationships that came up is that we in a sense, have potentially could be seen as two groups or vested interests. We've got faculty staff with indefinite contracts, we've got fixed-term contract researchers. Those people themselves bring different, different backgrounds. So, and I think we realised, all of us, especially because Andrea, Kathleen and Tamara brought with them experience. Andrea comes from a philosophy background, and also has been employed for several years as a care worker. And Tamara is a care worker who has alongside that, recently completed her own PhD research looking at care homes. And Kathleen brings a wealth of practice with older people and their lived experience. So immediately they were sort of challenging us and asking us, well, what's the process of this project? It wasn't about, tell us the protocol, tell us the tasks, we'll go and do it. It was immediately about discussion, reflection on our processes, and a negotiation of what kind of team we would be, and whether all of us were prepared to use our research project and have a process evaluation using data from meetings and discussions and reflections to look at key decision points and how those were taken forward. So what was some of the impact of this? Right away, people said, well, this name isn't right, this is colonialism, you know, we can't go with this name. And so we set up discussions and did a doodle poll, and the project name changed to REACH, research. Now I've lost my acronym. That's terrible, isn't it? So it's I know I've written it down somewhere because I was sure I would do this. Turns to the page. Research, active, research active in care homes, but there's another R on the front, which will occur to me. So immediately we change, you know, decisions that had been made as the project had evolved were being challenged and being revisited. And another thing that, as we reflected on it, we were thinking that we would use existing networks to recruit people to the advisory group, to recruit people as potential researchers. And as we reflected on this, people were saying, well, actually, what about people who don't usually get approached? Coming back to Arnstein's, Cornwall's point of view, these aren't homogenous groups. What about, you know, being a resident in a care home, other qualities might be more important, gender, income, educational experience. These things may be more important dynamics. How do we get to the people in care homes where the care is perhaps indifferent and the care providers aren't actively involved in the sort of networks that NIHR are setting up and supporting in things like Enrich? How do we make contact with those people? So, and then, how do we know whether people want to be members of an advisory group? Do we invite them to be a member of an advisory group, or might they want to be a researcher, or might they want to engage with us in some other way? And so the team developed an information leaflet in which people could say and choose the level of involvement that they might want, or indicate the level of involvement that might work for them. And we decided that we would use local media to try and reach out and get in contact with people who we might not know through existing networks. So, of course, then we were into needing, you know, to keep these relationships safe. And in the context of research, We have accepted practices about how we do this, don't we, through ethical review and research governance processes. But we wanted people to be involved at a stage advising us on really refining the project before getting something really nailed down with a proposal that would go through an ethics committee. And so we got ethical advice, and we've been supported to go out with our press release in local papers and free papers that we feel might well be delivered to care homes and of interest to residents, relatives and workers in care homes. And we hope that people might, you know, we might make contact with a few people like this. Don't know who we might make contact with. Our press office advised us that we might make contact with people who wanted to tell us horror stories about care, and that actually she felt the media, that would be what the media would be interested in, and they might want us to tell horror stories about care. So the press release goes out on Wednesday, and we'll see what response we get from, first of all, from the media, and then hopefully from members of the public. Meanwhile, institutional pressures. We will be called to account for how we're spending this money. So we have to continue some of the research work, although we haven't yet got our partners. So
We decided to continue with some of the literature review work. And here's a little bit of information about the parameters of the stud, the literature review, the terms that we're using. Took a lot of thinking through, because in a sense a systematic literature review is very much from a health discipline, whereas research in care homes might encompass social sciences, social care perspective and health perspective. So different terms, different paradigms, different considerations. But this is the literature that we're aiming to include, where there's something said about the PPI and we're taking that as one of our primary outcomes, although it might not be the primary outcome of each of the pieces of work that we're looking at. But we're hoping that the collaboration on the literature review will go forward, and that we will have a sort of accessible way of having summaries of papers that people can then discuss and sort of can be made meaningful, that in some way we can pull out what it is that's meaningful and important to our PPI team members. And again, the question of energy, attention, interest. At the moment, we've got 382 abstracts to be assessed for inclusion, exclusion. No doubt that will come down drastically, but still, you know, needing to balance that for people's attention. So in summing up, what we have, in a sense, is going into this process some valued principles about equal partnership, shared decision-making, inclusiveness, flexibility. But at the same time, these have to be in dialogue and in interaction with the different accountabilities that different members of the research team have. As a, you know, my name against the project, then we ask about delivering and the finances. We have fixed time frame, we have resources. So we're wanting to map this and note this dialogue and exploration as we go along. And so in conclusion, I think there's very much a need for evolving, reflective processes in redefining research relationships and working through these tensions with where we have these varied accountabilities and yet also have some fixed parameters. And the changes we've made along the way so far is to add in a process evaluation, to decide to reach out and try and build new relationships in addition to simply calling on existing and building on existing networks, and to offer the choice to potential PPI team members about the nature and extent of their activity. Thank you.
Thank you for the Q&A. So if you have questions, feel free to raise your hand, identify who you are, from where, which industry, and then feel free to ask questions. Why don't we start with the...
Okay. Nick Smith, PSSIU, University of Kent. Really interesting. I was just interested about accessibility in terms of care home residents and levels of cognitive impairment, and strategies you either use or think about using in order to make participation in research or participation as a researcher accessible to the wider.
I think that our strategy will have to be as situated as and contextualised as possible to make sense of this to people with cognitive impairment, and for the different levels of involvement. I think this is where with an ethical review, of course, we will need, for people who are going to become focus group members, for example, then we will need recruitment and information sheets, and we will need to have an approach to capacity to understand the implications of being involved. But I think that with the sort of being involved in the advisory group side of things and actively involved in this work, we're looking for an opt-in, and so we would think that somebody's got the level of understanding to kind of take notice either of this in the media, in a newspaper, or a relative might see it in the newspaper and talk to them about it, and sort of opt in that way. But I think that if we get some people, any involvement or interest from people with cognitive impairment, my approach would be to take it really contextual and small and short, focused, contextualised conversations.
I think I was coming at it from a similar perspective. I think that research that we've done in Cambridge recently, and nearly everyone, we had to go through consultees to get consent.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
It's hard to even do a face-to-face interview.
Yes.
Let alone imagine how they might understand that they're participating and acting as almost research advisors.
Yes.
And I suppose you're going back to your initial comment about tokenism.
Yeah.
And it's something we're very aware of. We're under pressure by you to involve certain
people in
PR capacity.
Yeah.
And it's how do you do that when you're talking about doing research with people who can't even consent to take part in the research.
Yeah.
And yet we're trying to do this extra step, which is involving in some sort of public patient involvement. I think sometimes the language around that is really difficult, quite challenging for those of us working with the high-end people with high-end needs, because we're being compared and asked to do things which you might do some people fill in a questionnaire or speak quite eloquently. Some of the service users that I've seen on public patient involvement panels are not typical service users, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So I think it would be really, I personally would be really interested to see how you...
I mean, one of the ways we've done a certain amount of this in a previous project, which is why we had some sense of looking at it, particularly to examine this question. And there we did we wanted advisory groups, so we went to a care home and you'd perhaps get a couple or three people in a care home and keep it short and keep it, you know, try and keep it really focused, or really sort of, you know,
concrete.
Yeah, concrete is absolutely the word. I think it raises a question: who can speak for whom, doesn't it, in terms of a homogenous group? Because you've got some people in care homes who are cognitively able, but perhaps very frail. And may well be interested in being involved, but can they speak for other people? And I suppose it was also my experience that there would be that there were certain care homes that were very encouraging and supportive, and yes, good, we want to work with those, and that may be the only way, but I'm also interested, well, what about those people who perhaps are in, you know, their care is funded in a, you know, in a care home that's, you know, then mediocre and doesn't get, you know, isn't in a position to sort of, doesn't get very involved. And so, we're going to try it out. But it is absolutely fraught with difficulties. It's going to be really interesting.
Okay, in view of time, I don't have a last question, but question.
My question is kind of
from
yours as well. My name's Wendy Dudley, I'm an independent qualitative researcher. I'm very interested to hear what you're doing actually. Where we're going to hear more about your work as well. But just coming on from the point about focus groups, where you've got people who perhaps have difficulty expressing themselves in a group setting, either because they've got cognitive impairment or for other reasons, would there be much opportunity to do face-to-face depth interviews with them? Possibly sort of short time bursts because their level of concentration would be quite interesting at times.
I think that's a really, really good point. And I think one of the things we've found previously with a sort of group situation is that as well, then you've got so much noise going on around and distance that people with sensory, you know, reduced hearing or reduced sight find it difficult to keep track of what's going on. So I think that we would use, you know, very small groups, possibly, you know, two or three people. So in a sense, it's that sort of boundary between an interview and a focus group, but I think what's focus group about it rather than an interview is the sense of perhaps using prompts and stimulus in the way you might in a focus group.
Thank you.